Welcome to episode 44 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is July 29th, 2012. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my fellow Olympiad, James Furlough.
Hey, coming to you straight from the mountain. Lion, that is.
Woo! Mountain lion! Oh, nice. It's you got the new operating system.
I do, and you are totally, like, jittery, so this may not work at all.
Dude, I got everything. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Well, my internet seems to be doing all right, so hopefully it'll be fine. But anyways, this week, like every week, as long as the internet allows, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations dealing back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing sometimes. Before we get into the hard show, James has got a short disclosure.
So sometimes I work for a company called HP that sometimes invents things. However, I do not represent them at all during the show, at least. So I should always say I, and if I say we, I really meant to say I.
All right, duly noted. We talk about all sorts of cool stuff on the show, and, you know, but just during the show isn't the only time we think about cool stuff. We've got all sorts of web presence, and one of the good places I like to post to is at Matthew D. Furlough. That's my Twitter handle.
And I am at James Furlough.
Nice. And the show is at Furlough Bros. But if you want to get more and more and more, you can go to our Facebook page, our Google Plus page, and the grand hub of it all is furloughbrothers.com or furloughbros.com, whichever you prefer. And that'll have all of the articles that we talk about this week and so much more. So go check it out.
Awesome. I'm going to try an experiment here. I'm going to turn off my camera, so don't freak out. I think it will work. See if I can't get some movement back from you, because I am totally scared right now.
Yeah, I can't tell if it's me or if it's you. My internet seems to be working fine, so
might mine be your is end. Mine is too, and you know who knows. I don't know. I was uploading videos from a recent trip that I just got back from. I tried to stop it, but you know how that thing can be sometimes.
Yeah, I do know how that can be.
But let's not talk about that. Instead, let's talk about something else that is driving me nuts. How about that?
That sounds perfect.
Yeah, why not? That's how you open these things.
What's driving you crazy?
Oh, that's weird. It says it couldn't be found. So I wrote a blog post because I'm awesome.
Nice.
I don't know. On the 25th, it looks like. And it's called SimCity Social, Not the Game You Know and Love. If you remember back in our E3 podcast, I mentioned being kind of excited about that.
Yes, I do remember that. I remember you tweeted it earlier that week, and we talked about it during the show.
Yeah.
It seemed cool.
It did seem cool. And I've always been a fan of the SimCity games, and I do play one game called Millionaire City. It's by Digital Chocolate on Facebook. And, you know, so I was like, dude, I'm ready for it. Let's play it. I have been playing it for a little while, and I think they say it's technically in beta, and I hope that's the case because, oh, my gosh. So here's the deal, okay? I'm a player who how do I want to say this? I don't like
to play. Yeah.
I don't like stupid constraints.
Yeah. Okay?
If something makes sense, like, oh, you need, you know, money to build this building, or you need like resources to build this building. Okay, fine. You know, I get it. That makes sense to me. But then when games try to add artificial constraints for no apparent reason, I don't get it, and it drives me nuts.
I want an example.
Okay. So, and there's been a few games that have done this, and quite honestly, it sucks all the fun out of all of the games. One of them, now for SimCity, in order to do something, it requires power. In the sense that, like, you are given a certain number of points, call them power points, if you will, and, like 10 when the game first starts. And then when you do something, it takes one away. So, like, you say, give me a plot of land for, you know, zone for residential. Or build a building, really, is more like a residential building. It goes, okay, take one away. And then every, like, two, I think it's like 2.5 or 3 minutes, it will regenerate that PowerPoint. Okay? But let's say that you go, oh, I need to clear this block of trees first before I can build this road. Oh, how many trees are there? 5. Boom, 5 PowerPoints gone in order to get rid of those 5 trees. And the first one is still regenerating because it took you less than 3 minutes to make that decision and destroy the trees.
Right.
So, when you get started, you get, I kid you not, like 5 minutes in, and you're done. Now you have to wait.
Oh, man.
You know, the remainder of the 2 minutes. Oh, cool, I got my power back. Now what can I do with my one move? Never mind the fact that I've got like 10,000 simoleons sitting in my bank account. I can't do
it. Simoleons are not people from Somalia, right? That's
Somalians.
Money.
These are simoleons. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. That's your dollar bills.
That's their money. Gotcha. Now, one of the things they did include is it doesn't just take money anymore to build something. You have to have like these packages, which I just like to think of like you know, like wood, lumber, whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. Which I'm like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
I get it. That's fine. So it's like the instant one of those games has that is like lame. Here you get me, someone who is literally ready to sink an hour of my life into this game to really dive into it and have a lot of fun with it. And 10 minutes in, I can't play anymore.
That's super frustrating. That's really frustrating.
Now the idea is, and what I've noticed is as you move up in levels, because I'm stubborn, I will fight it. You get more power options, you know, but for whatever reason, they always seem to make it so that I kid you not, it takes me less than 10 minutes to run through it. Now here's what's interesting. I have recently run into a new problem where once again, I've had a 10-minute lap or 10-minute cap, but it's not because I run out of power anymore.
Yeah.
You're going to love this. So in a lot of these games, they give you a small plot of land, and then you have to expand it over time.
Right.
Which is kind of the way. With this one, in order to expand your land, it requires permits, okay? Which are these other, like, random things that you get when you, you know, you like you click on a building to collect the rents. Oh, cool, I get something else special for it. It's one of the other requirements for building things, and quite honestly, I haven't quite figured out how that works, but, you know, whatever. So,
dude, nobody in California has either.
So you get these permits, or you're supposed to have these permits, and I kept waiting for like the magical drop to happen when I would get these permits, and I was like, I don't get it. And whenever I like clicked on a land for sale, it'd be like, oh, you need permits. Ask your friends to send you a permit. I'm like, or I'll just wait for the magical drop. I did some searching online. There is no magical drop. The only way to expand your city is to ask your friends.
Oh, my gosh.
Or the other option is you can use diamonds to pay for everything, but
diamonds cost real money.
Yes. So those are your two options. Either A, you pay real money to play more, or B, you harass your friends to join the game to give you permits. Which, I mean, okay, I get it. I understand the business model and the logic behind it. So my big problem is my city, I literally expanded it to the limits, and now I just collect rents. And at the time I wrote this, I had like 95,000 simoleons, and I have nowhere to spend it because I can't expand my city because I don't have any friends who play this game also.
That's awful. That's awful. That is really not the cocaine drug trafficking model that they should be going for, which is to get everybody hooked and then slowly... Yeah, sorry.
That's what I like about like the Farmville stuff, in the sense that you technically don't ever have to spend a penny, and you get to enjoy 99% of the game. Now, if you want to get something fun and special, okay, cool, pay for it. If you want to go faster, okay, cool, pay for it. I don't know how to continue on.
That was one of the brilliances of Team Fortress 2. You know, they introduced, I don't know if you've ever played that game, but it's an online multiplayer first-person shooter type game made by Valve. It's a free game to download. Mm-hmm. It's a free game to play. The only thing that you can pay for is in-game purchases, and you can buy weapons, but there's no weapon that you can buy that you can't make or find.
Yeah. Okay.
And then for whatever crazy reason, they decided to introduce hats, which are like just decoration, and people went nutty for hats, and so they're like, people spend tons of money on hats. You know, they don't help your character at all. And the weapons, the other thing that the weapon, you know, the big thing about the weapons is that your stock weapon is pretty good. Like, you can do a lot of damage with a stock weapon. The upgraded weapons, usually they either just change how they look, they give you a really small viewpoint advantage, or they have a different range or a different, you know, usually it's like every weapon is pretty well, there's no super weapons that you can buy. You know, it's just like, and you sit there and you go, it's one of those things where, yeah, it's all really well balanced, and you basically just pay money so you can get further faster. But you can play a lot and have a great time without spending a cent. And in the first 20 minutes of playing,
yeah,
you know, once you got the controls down, you sit there and you go, that's a brilliant, they make tons of money off of Team Fortress 2. You know, that is a great model. If you're not going to go the subscription route, you know, like a lot of those types of games will, you got to give people, the ability to play, and then you give them, you know, and then you give them either speed, you know, one of the big things that I, having never played Farmville, I, as I understand it, one of the big perks to spending money is that you basically get to buy more stuff faster.
Yeah.
It's not like you can't earn the money in game. It's just like okay, I'm tired of waiting. It's like paying for cheat codes, which is like, I don't know, that just seems kind of, you know, it's a good model. You know, another game
Have, like, special buildings. Hey, here's the special holiday fiesta barn. You know, it doesn't add anything to the game. It doesn't let you do anything extra special other than your friends will see it and go, whoa, that's awesome. You paid money
or something.
I don't know. My final paragraph I said, I suppose my biggest frustration is that I can tell EA had a good idea for a game. And they were showing these good models. Then they slowly added complexity and layers to the game, not to make it more compelling and engaging, but to artificially increase player counts or force people to pay money. Instead, what they made was a game that feels forced and, surprisingly, given the franchise's history, extremely limited.
Ooh, well worded. I'm going to complain really quick. EA is also making a Command and Conquer type game. Like that, where it's a social Command and Conquer play in browser. Yeah, and it's like 100 times more awful than that. Like, it's unbelievable how bad it is.
I was just so bummed, because it has so much potential, and it just kills me. I hope that when they come out with whatever the next version of SimCity is called is, what is it, 2013? Is that what they're going to call it? Or 2013? SimCity 5000? Whatever. Maybe just call it 5.
I don't remember.
I hope that when they come out with that, you know, that they don't add those kind of dumb artificial restrictions. You know, if you want to let a loner like me play, who's going to pay, you know, the 40 or 50 bucks already up front, just let me play the entire game and, you know, limit me on, you know, I got to have their money and I got to have their resources. Okay, that's fine. That's logical. This whole power thing, I don't get it. I've seen other games do it too. They tend to be a little bit more generous in the amount of power that they give you, so you don't hit the cap as often.
Yeah.
But I don't, and maybe I'm not the right player. I don't know. But I hit these caps way too early, and then I got to stop playing, and so I shut it down. Is that really what they wanted?
I don't think you're the wrong type of player. I think they've not figured out how to really capitalize on other games well. You know, I think that's bad game design. That's pretty quintessentially bad game design, you know.
That's weird. Well, EA, I hope you're listening. I know they're not doing that great financially, and if this is a sign, well, there you go.
Yeah, it's not exactly a surprise. Well, anyway, something that's a little more optimistic going on in the world right now. Turns out they found a cure for AIDS.
Yes! A cure Pretty for AIDS.
Awesome. Cure for AIDS. Are you positive? Are you sure? No. No, I was lying.
Way to ruin the joke.
HIV positive, I know. God dang it. Ask me. How do you cure AIDS? You get cancer is the long or the short of it. Basically what they found
Okay.
That sounds great.
That reminds me of was it Sergeant Payne? There's a throwback movie. Yeah. Where the guy's like he's like, what do you
no,
say?
No, it was Sergeant Payne. It's Major Payne.
Major Payne. That's right. Where, like, this soldier buddy, he's, like, shot. He's like, my leg shot. It hurts. He goes, here, let me see your thumb real quick. And he, like, breaks his thumb. He's like, ah, my thumb. He goes, yeah, see, your leg doesn't hurt anymore, does it?
Yeah.
Problem solved. But it actually cures it, though. It doesn't just distract
this, yes. So what? This is what's happened. Basically, there's this dude. They called him, he's the Belgian patient, as they what they've
Berlin
him.
Or Belgian?
Or maybe Berlin. I can't remember. One of those European. Okay, we're gonna go with Berlin. So basically, what happened was the dude got leukemia and also already had AIDS, and they did a bone marrow transplant in order to cure the leukemia, which is a painful and torturous but rather effective cure for leukemia.
Yeah.
And when you switch out, when they gave him the bone marrow, it turned out that there's a small percentage of people in the population that are genetically invulnerable to AIDS. They're trying to figure out why. They're trying to figure out how to capitalize on that. But there are some people that are immune to it. And the guy that he got a transplant from was immune to AIDS. Yeah, and ended up basically what ended up happening was when he got the bone marrow, the T cells, which become the white blood cells, which is what AIDS destroys, the HIV destroys, causing AIDS. When he got the T cells that were resistant, for whatever reason, all of a sudden you have all these white blood cells and they get into the bloodstream in between the retroviral drugs he was taking and the new resistant white blood cells. The HIV virus was completely eradicated, and he is no longer HIV positive, which was pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, caused quite a radical stir, but they'd only ever seen it once, and so they weren't sure if this was a repeatable thing or what it really meant to. So it was a group of scientists who basically went out looking for people who had AIDS and got leukemia and got cured of leukemia to see where they were at. And they actually found two candidates who fit that bill, but they also did one more thing. They continued to be on their retroviral medication while going through their leukemia chemo treatment, which is not usually the case. Usually they let the HIV virus grow while you're getting chemo, because chemo is such a brutal treatment and the retrovirals are such a brutal treatment that it's in order to kind of keep you balanced, they let the HIV grow, and then once you get better from cancer, they'll put you back on the retrovirals and get you back in balance. But for whatever reason, they decided to not do that with these two guys, and it's been a couple of years and they can't find any HIV in them. It seems to be totally gone.
Wow.
They haven't been diagnosed. There's a certain time periods, and they're being really hesitant in actually declaring that these guys don't have that these guys are cured. But they haven't found any trace of it. And basically, what they have to do is they have to do a certain number of tests over a certain number of years, and have no trace in order to be declared cured. So far they're well on the way, and so the thought is that obviously there's you know, so now it's like this is rather impractical for the millions of people that have AIDS right now, but it's really exciting because it's like the first time that we have seen something where we can say we can cure it. We know it's curable. We have evidence of it being curable. It's not a theoretical, hypothetical. We think we can cure it. We just had to figure out how. No, now we've seen a mechanism by which it can be cured, and hopefully it'll really spur on growth and more research and really actually lead to a pill that can, you know, hopefully, or something like that, that can actually be widely dispersed. And so, like, in the last 2 months, we've released approved a drug that can act as that can actually keep you from getting AIDS, being infected by HIV. And wow. we've also seen a more clear path for finding a full on cure. So AIDS is on the way out. Get excited.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge deal. It's huge. That would be a pretty awesome one to eradicate. I know that's not a normal tech talk, but it seemed to fit in with the norm. It's high technology that makes that sort of stuff possible, and I'm sure we'll be talking about, over the years, talking about all sorts of different cool stuff, but it's biotechnology. That stuff's important.
Yeah.
Anyways, really. So share some good news.
Nice. I have other good news. I want you to think about the number $2.1 trillion.
Okay, that's a big number, but I'm thinking about it.
It is a big number. And that particular number represents how much money consumers worldwide are expected to spend this year on tech toys and services.
Holy cow. 1.2 bills.
No.
Trills.
Yes. Quite a bit of money. And it's actually supposed to be up this year by like $114 billion compared to last year.
That is good news. As somebody whose job is pretty much directly tied to the consumer electronics market.
Yeah. How is it? The two biggest ones are from mobile app stores and e-text content.
Oh, so not actual consumer electronics?
Well, I mean, that's all part of it's tech toys and services. I mean, those are just two of the biggest growth ones. Mobile services account for, $800 billion. And what else? Mobile phones account for $222 billion.
I need you to tell me that there's growth in the consumer electronic purchasing, not tech service. Yeah, that's actually not good news for me at all.
All right. Well, I don't think I've accounted for the entire 2.1 trillion. So,
okay,
it's in there somewhere. But
what is this compared? If you don't mind me being a little bit sad, but what is this compared to years past, like 2008? Do they talk about that at all?
Well, like I said, it's up $114 billion compared to last year. Okay. And by 2016, they expect it to go up to $2.7 trillion.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah, so it's growing, I guess, to answer it that way. Yeah, it's a big number.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Hopefully it gets bigger.
That's a lot of money for people to spend on tech toys.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true.
Good that for was the it. Economy. That's all I got.
Awesome.
Just sharing some numbers.
I appreciate that. Sweet. So,
oh, tell me about...
The
game doesn't stop. So I shared this article with you a little bit earlier. It's the question is, or the statement, I guess, is how Waze can beat Apple and Google at real-time maps. And I thought this was a really cool article by Pando Daily, because that's your question, right? I like their opening paragraph here. For a startup just gaining serious traction, it's your basic nightmare. Apple, Google, or Facebook decides to enter your space. Those first few million users you earned through blood, sweat, and tears will surely be swept up with the masses on the giant's platforms. And once the big guy throws its dev resources at the problem, your app addresses, what chance does your tiny, overworked team stand? Too bad they didn't buy you instead. ... Your company is toast. Sound familiar, right?
Yes, it does. It sounds like terrible news if you're, in the biz.
Yeah, what I thought was cool, though, is then they said, well, let's hold up a second. Let's talk about this. Because there are some examples, and they one of them is Instagram, which, did actually get bought because they weren't going to get beat. Another one is Foursquare. Remember when it was like Google was getting into it, and especially when Facebook was like, we're getting into Facebook?
I remember it just being like, well, that was fun for Foursquare. That's game over.
Yep. How about Dropbox?
Who threatened Dropbox at first?
Well, currently there's Google Drive, and then Apple has their syncy thingy.
Right, that's cloud. That's good. We did like a half of a show on those, and I forgot about. That tells you how dominant Dropbox is. Google Drive, I don't use it. I don't use it for anything other than my Google Documents. I've got SkyDrive, which I don't use at all. And I've got iCloud, which I don't do anything with it unless it automatically does it using, iMatch.
And then the other example they gave, there were probably more in there, but the only one I remember was Yelp. The service that Google has threatened to kill over and over and over again and just can't seem to do it. And now they're being integrated, supposedly, right? Into the new iOS 6 mapping system. And heck, even Siri, is integrated with Yelp whenever you do a voice search for something.
Yeah.
And so I just thought it was a really cool article because it's like, you know what? Everyone seems to be saying that Waze is out for the count. Supposedly, because Apple's coming into their space with turn-by-turn direction. They're like, but wait a second here. They have been out on Android for a while, and Google has its own built-in map. And as far as, Waze is concerned, like, we have a good, strong, growing user base on Android phones as well. We're not just on iOS. And I think it's cool.
So my question is, what do you think a service like Waze is going to have to do specifically in order to actually stay afloat, stay ahead of Google Maps? And because what I think is, it's like, each of these services, one of the things that I think Dropbox did really, really, really well is they're just a folder on your desktop that connects to all of your different stuff. They don't do anything else. They don't do anything special. They're not like iCloud, which has kind of weird management things because Apple hates file systems. And they're not like SkyDrive that doesn't have a desktop version. They're not like Google Docs where they try to automatically turn everything into some sort of a Google format for you anytime you touch that folder. Like, it's just, no, all we do is move folder. We just keep your folder, keep your files constant. And it's like, they do something that nobody else is willing to do. They have a niche and everybody likes it. I think all you'd have to do as Google at this point is to really play nice the same way that Google or Dropbox does and give you some more space. And I feel like you could do some real damage to Dropbox. So my question is, what do you think Waze can do that would really give it a strategic advantage over Maps and Google Maps?
So there's a couple things, I think, for Waze. The first one, like you talked about, is just be cross-platform. Work on every single device, iOS, Android, Windows Phone. I can ignore BlackBerry, but pretty much those, hit those big three. Be the same app where someone like me or like say our mom could pick it up and go, cool, I know how to use this instantly. You can sign in with your username and all your data's there, right? Where your home is, where work is, that kind of stuff. You know, the other thing that they've kind of got going for them is it's all this like real-time user-contributed data, which the way that they make their maps and collect their information is legitimately different than the way everybody else does it. You know, Google's got their own cars driving around, and Waze is like, actually just turn on the app, drive around, and we'll figure it out from there.
We're gonna use you.
And now they got into traffic was a big one for them doing the real-time traffic, which I remember Google was talking about that and like, you know, we got all these cell phones on, you know, let's start figuring out traffic stuff. And they started to run into privacy concerns, and I haven't heard much about it, but that's because I'm not in the Android ecosystem. Whereas Waze is like, that's a big deal, and people talk about they turn Waze on all the time for that. It's funny, I was taking a trip up to Portland, and Waze didn't want me to get on the freeway. And like half the time, I will actually joke around and be like, I turn on Waze just to laugh at it to give me entertainment on the drive because its directions can be so wrong. It's hilarious the ways that it takes me. And this particular one, it didn't want me to get on the freeway, and I was just like, this is hilarious, just let me on the freeway, I'm going to ignore you, I know how to get on the freeway, I'm going. And it just kept going, like correcting. And what I'll tell my mom was with me at the time, and I was like, eventually it'll figure it out that I'm going to take the freeway, and it'll just tell me take the freeway. And this one was different in the sense that, like, no, it kept ignoring. I was literally in the turn lane to go onto the freeway, and it was like, no, go straight. Don't get on the freeway. And what I should have been doing was looking at where I was turning instead of like focusing on Waze. I turn onto the freeway, stop and go traffic. And Waze's route was literally to take the side road the entire way. And I was like, well,
that's awesome.
Missed that one, didn't I? Should have trusted in the ways.
You're a little bit smarter than me. You know, I read somewhere, it might have been that article, might have been somewhere else, but I thought it was really a unique perspective. The argument was Google is going to be really good for, you know, Google and IMAPs are going to be really good for finding some place you're not used to. Let's say, like, you know, you want to, okay, you're driving to a friend's house and you need to find a Starbucks, or you're looking for a movie theater, you're looking for, you know, whatever. But one of the things that they don't really help you with is, let's say you already know the route, you're going to take because you go every day because it's where you work, or it's where you live, or it's where you go to, you know, Taekwondo classes, or, you know, whatever. What it's going to tell you is it's going to give you real good data up to date. There's traffic in the way, take an alternate route. You know, that's where it's going to be real advantageous. And because of privacy concerns, it's going to be difficult for IMAPs and Android to, or Google Maps to really beat that real time, you know, thing that, mm-hmm. that Waze has got going on, which I think is a compelling idea. You know, I think but the problem is that, you know, that's all Google or Apple has to do is figure out how to, you know, get legitimate real-time user data without the privacy concerns, and, you know, and suddenly they'll have a competing product. But, you know, but as it stands, Waze definitely has a niche that they can fit into, and, you know, like you said, as long as it works the same on every platform and it works well, I mean, yeah, there's still a place for them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. You know, one size map does not fit all, which is nice.
Yeah.
I think they'll be around. I don't think they're going to die or anything like that. And I'll always need a chuckle for ridiculous directions. So right. I think the thing, honestly, my biggest gripe with them is they'll get me there, but they will pick some random ways. Whereas like Google tends to be like, it might technically be like half a minute faster to go through this random neighborhood, but we're just going to keep you on the big road and not worry about it. You know, for whatever reason, they were smart enough to have figured that out. And
well, it's not a classical shortest route algorithm, for a number of reasons. Number one, those are ever heard of the traveling salesman problem? Basically, the only way to find the shortest route is to check every single possible route and then compare for the shortest, which, you know, on a countrywide map system is just not actually possible. So you have to narrow it down through a couple of different criteria and then compare a smaller number of, mm-hmm. of possible routes. And what they've done is in order to they've come up with a really intelligent system of narrowing it down, like you said, picking main thoroughways, well-trodden stuff, things that are designed that take into account more than just distance plus allowable top speed to figure out the shortest, whatever shortest by a second. You know, and because they do that, they give you, you know, you end up with a really reliable and good direction. So, mm-hmm. you know, and whereas Waze, it sounds like it's just a brute force traveling salesman problem. What's the shortest route? You know, and those, yeah, those can get you crazy results.
Yeah. So I'm gonna throw you a curveball here. We got a question in the comment section.
Go for it.
It says, "Do I have the Furlough Bros endorsement on buying the Nexus 7?" Compliments of Mr. Yancey Eaton.
You know, I haven't actually gotten to play with one yet, and I really want to, but I still think it's a, you know. The iPad Mini is probably going to come out in September. Just mentally prepare for that. But that being said, it seems like a good product, good price point. If you're going to go Android, that is the route to go for sure. And if I feel tempted to do it, just because
of the price point.
No. Just I am not so fully invested in the Mac ecosystem that I need to buy. You know, I need to stay in Apple. I have a Windows. I have a Windows computer, an iOS 3 phone, an iOS 6 iPod Touch. You know, a Logitech keyboard and mouse. A Wii. You know, I don't. So for me, it's like I've got all these different platforms that play all these different formats and everything. So throwing an Android in there isn't that crazy yet. Okay, it's just another one. And yet I also, like, so many of my online services are Google based, you know, from that I use. So, you know, for me, it's like I could see it as a compelling part of my personal constellation of computing. And that's a term we haven't used in a while.
Yeah.
So, Yancey, if you're not, like, totally, if you have,
do you think
all
the
stuff,
he asked if you think the iPad Mini will be like $200? Think it'll be in that price range?
I don't know.
Die of shock if it is. Do you want to kill Yancey? That's the question.
What?
Do you want him to die of shock?
Oh, do I want him to die of shock? No, I do not. Do not want him to die of shock. I'm thinking I'm, you know, $250. Okay. I'm gonna
just
bet
have to really
$250.
Bother us all.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, it's gonna.
Yeah,
be...
and you know what they're gonna do is they're gonna compare it to the 16 gig Nexus 7.
Yeah,
they go, that's 250.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And we'll give you 16 right
do.
There. Done. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Yeah, but
you know. All right.
Oh yeah, of course.
So I have a friend who I go watch baseball games with him, and he was asking me, he's like, you know, should I get it or no? He wanted to get it was I think I told you about this. He wanted to get the Amazon Kindle. And it was literally the week that the Nexus 7 came out on sale. And I was like, no, stop, don't do it. Get the Nexus 7. And
right.
He said it took him like 2 days to pull the trigger, and by the time he did, it was sold out everywhere. He was like, ah, I should have listened to you. I was like, well, you know, it happens. But I think he did say that he found one in some random shop somewhere.
Supposedly Staples got them. Staples has them on display.
Yeah, well, he wanted the 16. He didn't want the 8. So
okay.
And 16 was the one. That was...
Well, everybody wants it because 8 is nothing. 8 is literally...
I can't remember. This was a guy who he has an Android phone, which is why I was like, dude, just go with that. And he cares about price. And so I was like, this will be perfect for you. And he was like, yeah, but will it have enough space for me if I get the 8 or should I get the 16? And I was like, well, what do you have on your phone right now? He goes, email. I was like, well, okay. What else do you have on your phone? He goes, nothing. That's it. I went, let me see your phone real quick. So he had a 16, no, he had a, Yeah, he had a 16, no, it was an 8 gigabyte SD card in his phone.
Yeah.
7.6 remaining free space. I was like, yes. You're not kidding. You literally just do email. He goes, well, yeah, that's why I'd get it, so I could, you know, do email, you know, just have something, you know, a goof-off machine. I was like, well, but you don't. Okay.
But you don't use it to goof off.
Yeah, I was like, so you just want a bigger email screen? That's a little weird, but your money, I guess. Get the. I advised him to get the 8 because I was like, you don't need the 16. Save your $50. Buy a couple apps.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I'm at this point.
Like, buy apps. I'm going to do that. I don't know. Buy some music. Buy some videos, fill it up.
Yeah,
that's why you got it.
Exactly. If you can wait, in my opinion right now for anybody looking for a tablet is if you can wait till September 21st and hear what Apple has to offer, that's what I would do. But I wouldn't, you know. But if you don't want to wait, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. You're going to miss the first generation.
Like, let's say
Apple
you're
product.
Getting ready to take a European trip. You don't want to take your laptop. Flight's leaving in less than a week. What do you do?
Oh yeah, I'd buy one.
All right,
I'd buy one. Yeah. I wouldn't think about that. It's, you know, it's one of those things where I doubt that whatever the Mac, whatever the iPad mini does will be so unbelievably, you know, incredibly. I doubt that the iPad mini will do something that will make it incredibly great compared to Nexus 7 at this point. You know, it'll just be iOS, which I personally think for most consumers is a better platform, but you know, but if you kind of know what you're doing with technology and you're not afraid to, you know, download apps to make everything fit and work together, yeah, you won't be disappointed by it, you know.
I'm going to make a prediction right now. Okay, so okay. You can write this down on your Google Calendar.
Okay.
I don't, how long do I want to give this? I'm going to say it's going to take 2 years. 2 years, I think. It might happen in a year, but I think you're more stubborn than that. Here's my prediction. 2 years from now, you will officially be an Android Google fanboy. You'll still like Apple stuff. You'll still like it. You'll respect it, but you will prefer Google products over Apple products. 2 years from now, max. It could be as short as 1 year.
You know, and it's...
There's a slow transition happening. It's subtle, but I noticed it.
I'm, you know, and I'm in a dangerous position because it's like I can get anything. Like, I don't... There's nothing... I'm not invested in an ecosystem. It wouldn't be... It's not difficult for me to go any which direction at this point.
So your problem, yeah. Your problem is that, like you said, you have no money, so you're not invested, but you have analyzed it to death. And so when you actually do get the money, it's time to pull the trigger. Oh, you're going to be torn. You're going to, I don't know what to do. The Nexus 7 looks so good. The iPad mini looks so good. But maybe it's the iPad. Maybe it's an Android phone. Maybe it's a combination. Maybe I just get it all. I don't know.
Well, you know, ultimately, that's the big thing for me right now. There's no 10-inch Android phone, Android tablet that really impresses me. I would get the iPad. I wouldn't get an iPad mini, personally. You know, and that so that makes it easy for me for a tablet. But it's like
for phone a window wise, shopper.
Yeah, I know, yeah, exactly. So, but phone wise, man, right? You know, let's see what the iPhone 5 has to offer. But you know, I can see why people are going out and getting Galaxy S's right now.
See,
you know,
with 2 years, within 2 years.
All right.
I guarantee the iPhone 5 is not going to look that much different than the 4S.
I've seen, they're already leaking pictures of it and stuff. You can't tell except for the fact that there's an extra row of icons, which almost seems lame, but whatever.
There you go. See, the transition, it has started. And now that I've officially planted the seed.
You've given me permission to do it. So
is it people like you that's causing problems for Apple potentially?
No, actually. So this week, if anybody was paying attention, which, why would you be? Apple had their earnings call.
I went on vacation.
I know. Apple had their big earnings call this week, and it's usually fun time for stockholders because the price usually goes up when they release their earning calls. Because generally what happens is Apple gives a guidance. They exceed the guidance, but at the same time, Wall Street makes all of their estimates, and they kind of average what everybody is saying, and then Apple usually beats the Wall Street estimates. And this has been going on quarter after quarter for like 4 years. For literally the last 16 quarters, the average Wall Street estimates have undershot Apple, and so usually there's a pickup in the stock price after that. But it always looks really bad for the Wall Street dudes, because it looks like they can't estimate worth beans, and because they can't when it comes to Apple, for whatever reason, they're really bad at it. And so this time around, they decided we're going to really, really shoot high. We're just gonna put it out there. We think Apple's gonna do great. And then the worst thing that could have possibly happened, Apple made no profits, they lost tons of money, they were thinking about declaring bankruptcy, and so the stock just plummeted. There was literally, okay, and this is where I stop exaggerating. The stock fell so much, people thought that, like, literally it could take down the U.S. economy. It could cause another crash. I mean, everybody suffered because
really?
The earnings call was so bad. Oh yeah, I mean it was a big deal. People were kind of freaking out about this. And as I kind of stated earlier, I might have been exaggerating a little bit about that, because about how bad they did. Because there's this juxtaposition of what was going on. And for me, I want to give you my perspective. I actually didn't read the earnings call until this weekend. All I paid attention to was what the stock market was doing and what other people were talking about. So without any actual knowledge of what was going on financially for Apple, all I was doing was paying attention to what the word on the street was. And the word on the street was that Apple had one of the worst quarters ever. And it was just totally bad news.
Huh.
And then I read the earnings call. They had a humongous year-over-year growth quarter-to-quarter. So this quarter, they grew like 140%. It was crazy. They made so much more money this quarter. They beat their earnings estimates or their earnings guidance, which is basically
– Well, they do that every quarter.
Right, exactly. And they do that on purpose. And so it's like they basically said, this is how much we think we're going to make. And then they made a crazy amount more than that. And not only that, not only did they beat their guidance, have a crazy huge year-over-year growth, this is the third best quarter in Apple history. The only two quarters that have outperformed in their history was Q1 2012 and Q2 2012. They've literally... Q2 was their best, Q1 was their second best, Q3 was their third best, and Q4 will bump all of those down one, and what the prediction is, and this will be the best year financially that Apple has ever had. They will make more money this year than ever before, and Q3 helped contribute to that in a big way. And their stock price dropped so dramatically, it threatened to crash the U.S. economy for a day and a half. It's crazy. I have no idea what's going on. Like, who are you people? Who's buying this stock? it's nuts. It's just absolutely nuts what's going on with their stock right now. And them as a company, you know, and this is solidly not the technology side of the company, but it's, you know, it's a big part of the corporate opera, and it's what they're perceived to be, and like it was perceived to be this really disappointing quarter, and it was a fantastic quarter, it was a great quarter. One of the things that so I wrote a couple.
This is what kills me about stocks.
Give it to me. Lay it on me.
You should never invest in single stocks, just for the record. And one of the reasons why I hate the stock market is, I mean, it's just not good enough to grow and to even in this particular instance, to grow more than ever before. I realize the stock price is all aligned with, like, perceived expectations for the future, and, you know, and it takes into account all information when it's received to instantly update. I mean, I get it. Intellectually, it's emotional, I guess, at least in the short term.
It is.
Which is why you should only invest in the long term, because that will get rid of all emotional stuff, and you should diversify a lot, because that will further get rid of emotional issues. There's another word there. Diversify, and that's where you go deep. I don't remember the other word, but it's where you buy all sorts of different things. But anyways,
right.
That's why you should do that. It's just, oh, it's so frustrating. Because, I mean, the thing I think about, like, HP, because I know them and I, you know, don't represent them, but I work
there. I work there from time to time.
Yeah, it happens. The last few quarters have not been horrible.
Right.
We regularly make money. Now, granted, it's not as much as we used to, but money is still coming in. And at our stock price, I just looked to see what the Apple stock price was, and it's below $19. I believe near the beginning of the year, it was at like 26, which was still like half of what it was just a couple years ago.
Right.
And it just, like, you get there and go, it makes money. I don't understand.
Yeah.
To the point where, if I read something correctly, HP is going to start giving out dividends themselves. Which is like, you right. only do that if you make money, if you're a money machine. And
yeah, Apple gave out a $2.50 per share dividend. That's twice as big as the dividend they gave out when they announced their first big, we're giving dividends. Not to mention the like $10 billion stock buyback that they're allowed to do. It's like, you sit there, yeah, oh, dude, I get it. I get where you're coming from, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, it's just, it's nuts that these stock prices are so bounded by, or are jerked around so much by emotional buying and stuff.
So when I listen or read about one of these quarterly earnings, there's a couple things that I look for and then just kind of, you know, move on. Nothing to see here. You know, the first one is, I just want to know, did you make money? Yes or no?
Right. Yes.
And there are certain companies where you're just like, duh, you know, like Apple. Yeah, they made money. They're not going to go into the red, at least anytime soon. You look at RIM, and now it's like, yeah, they lost money. Now it's really a question of how much. Amazon's becoming interesting, right? Because they only made like $7 million this last quarter. And then you get a company like Nintendo, which, whoa, all of a sudden you guys are losing money quasi-regularly. You know, so I look at those things and oftentimes will try to read into, you know, the reason behind it. It was like Microsoft's quarterly loss. You go, okay, chances are they're not going to let that happen again next quarter no matter what.
Well, and that wasn't – I mean, I wouldn't – that wasn't – that was caused by them. They decided the timing
yeah,
on that.
Yeah, which is why
– That wasn't –
I right. mean, which is why they're going to – you know, if I were Ballmer, I would say, guys, we're not losing money next quarter. I don't care if that means we're going to delay paychecks by a month. We're not losing money.
Right.
To send the message that this isn't a normal thing. So anyways, right. I watch those things, and that's one of the big things I look for. I don't know. That's really the big one. And you just try to get a feel for, you know, are they growing or are they not? And I don't know. You just kind of move on.
So
put money in your 401k, especially if you have a matching plan, and just laugh.
Right. So I actually read a pretty good article talking about takeaways for Apple that I thought were, you know, interesting. Just interesting things that they picked up on through the earnings call. So, one of them was basically that management did everything but say the iPhone 5 will be arriving next quarter, which is like, duh. I think it was just an admission to the fact that everybody knows it. And one of the big reasons for this was because they talked about one of the big reasons they mentioned that is because basically people aren't buying iPhones because the iPhone 5 is coming and everybody knows it. And so there was not as much growth in the iPhone as they would have liked. And they referred to something as the fall transition, you know, which is, yeah, nice. Basically we're going to have new products and the iPhone 5 is coming, so get ready. Next, China is a huge growth for them, and it's going to continue to be huge, hugely growing. The MacBook Pro is really big for them. I think that's kind of obvious, but I didn't realize how big of a deal it was. It's Apple accounts for 26% of all portable market units and 47% of it by revenue in June, which is, you know, humongous. So the MacBook Pro is big. They keep growing in education. iCloud is still one of their big things. And then one of the things that the other interesting stuff was they talked about the carrier subsidy. And basically, they said the carrier subsidy issue is diminished, particularly with the launch of the new iPhone 5. As management put it, the subsidy is small compared to the monthly rates. The iPhone has the lowest churn of the phone.
Sprint said that, right?
Offer shared data plans. What?
That was Sprint who said that, right?
What'd you say?
Sprint.
Right. Yeah. And so basically what they're – and Apple echoed that. So basically what they're saying is, don't worry about the fact that we make a bunch of money. Don't worry about the price of the iPhones going up because the subsidies are going away. That's sticking with it. And the telecoms are – they were making a lot of noise because they were trying to figure out how to make themselves look better to their investors, but that's not a real concern. Don't worry about it. And they're just, you know, they were fighting back against that narrative that was building that somehow it was those that were killing them. But so basically long and short of it is, Apple had a stellar quarter. Next quarter is, prepped to be, insanely great. And, yeah. That should be fun. and the iPhone's coming. So
the iPhone's coming. Cool.
If you picked up on now, I've taken it one step further. It's not just September, it's September 21st. Put it on your calendars. That's the launch day.
So are you getting it September 21st?
You're looking at that
galaxy going, maybe.
not quite that. Not right. That's not where I'm at. So
did Apple do anything else interesting this week?
Yes, they did. Actually, I wanted to there's this company, it's called Authentic. It's like authentic, but it's got a tech at the end, like technology. It's pretty cool. Authentic is a chip manufacturer. They build finger scanner chips.
Oh, I know those.
They're for security purchases to make sure you are authentically the person using the phone.
Let's just go to the retina scans. That's what we saw in Minority Report. Let's just get there.
Why mess around
with fingerprints?
I don't know. Because it's like how everybody's doing it so far. Basically, what's going on...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, is in Japan, this is really big because I guess NFC is actually taken off there. I didn't realize that. But how they're really going about it in Japan right now is they're using this Authentic chip. It's built into your phone. So when you do an NFC purchase, it actually scans to make sure you're the right person. So basically somebody can't steal your phone that's connected to your bank account and then go on a purchasing spree.
So that's that instead of doing a PIN number.
Exactly. Okay. And so they're selling, one of their biggest buyers, one of the person that they supply to most is Samsung. Samsung's making a ton of phones using its chips, which is really funny because this week Apple purchased Authentic. And if you've been paying attention to the news at all, you realize that Apple and Samsung are fantastic frenemies.
Frenemies, big time.
Yeah, they hate and love each other, depending on
how long is that going to last, man? That is destined for bad.
I know. Something's going to happen there, and I can't wait for it because it's going to be awesome. It's going to explode. It's going to be great time. Pay attention to that episode. It's going to be a good one. but basically what's going on here is, Apple went to Authentic, said, hey, your stock's worth $5 a share. We'll pay you $8 a share to buy all of it, and then you'll come and, you know, belong to us, which is pretty interesting because this is a big move for Apple. Apple generally in the past they've purchased they like to purchase startups or non-publicly traded companies.
Well, wasn't that what Tim Cook said at his D conference thing? He's like, we're going to keep doing the under the radar purchases, nothing huge, nothing big.
Yeah, exactly. So this is kind of a big move, and obviously what it means is that they're continuing to keep moving forward on the whole NFC. I actually would not be surprised at all for us to find out that the iPhone 5 already has this chip built into it, and this is just their way of securing the supply chain, securing the technology, which is why they purchased them. Because, everybody's been talking about the NFC technology coming. Oh, yeah, it's coming. So either they bought it because they're going to be incorporating these guys into the iPhone 6, or because it's already built into the iPhone 5, and they realize that this company is like a $300 million company, which is big, but Apple likes to – Tim Cook, I should say, likes to secure the supply chain. He was the guy who came up with the genius idea of buying rights to the aluminum mines in Australia so that when aluminum supply is constrained throughout the globe, Apple would still have – the guys that are milling their aluminum have to get the aluminum from Apple because they already own it. So this is quintessentially an Apple strategy for being able to do something that nobody else can do, which if it's not really freaking out Samsung, really should freak out Samsung because they're guaranteeing their supply chain, which means that basically what they've done here, what they've moved to do here is prevent Samsung's success from allowing Apple to ship as many phones as they want, or having to raise the price. So this has kind of led to this big thing. It immediately explodes. Number one, there's a big investigation, class action lawsuit that will lead to a class action lawsuit. It's already begun. Basically what happens is there's a bunch of lawyers and people who said, excuse me, but you guys just kind of made this deal in a back room with Apple to the CEO or to the officers of Authentic. They're like, mm-hmm. No, we didn't even know about this, which means nobody knew about this. Did you shop around for the best price or did you just agree to the first, big payday? But basically what they're going to try to do is they're going to try to stop the sale and force it to go into public bidding. And they might have a case there because Google and Samsung basically said, we'll pay like $10 a share. And that's our offer. So right now, this one's heating up. This one's going to be fun for probably next couple of months for sure until something is settled here. But Apple made a really slick, sly move to go in, and Google's going to try to sneak in and steal it from them and protect Samsung.
Well, I don't know. Steal isn't necessarily the word to use there. They're going to try to buy protection for Samsung.
I'm gonna use the word steal. I picked the word on purpose.
All right. Well, then what would be awesome is if Apple went to Microsoft and said, "Hey, wanna have fun?"
Yeah, yeah. That would be pretty. Awesome.
I mean, honestly, they don't need to, but yeah, that'll be interesting to see what happens there.
So just fun companies, companies flailing at each other. The competition increases, but expect to see Authentic's technology soon.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be making phone payments left and right. I like it. So here's a quick one for you. This is a non-sponsored article, unfortunately, but it should be sponsored. Hey, Matthew, you have money, right?
From time to time.
Yeah, it happens. Well, when you do, you should use mint.com to... I'm not going to go with that. to track it. I know I do, and I love it. It's a free online tool, mint.com. Pretty sure everyone listening to this uses it because they're not idiots and they know how to expertly track where their money's going in and out.
I'm glad I'm not listening to this because then I would be an idiot.
I thought you said you were signed up for it.
I am signed up for it. I don't use it
you
as
don't use it.
As I should.
Brilliant. Well, you should at least once a month. One of the cool features that they just added this week is they made better trending tools to do it. Which
you know
I
what?
Thought
I'll
they
be,
were good.
I'll be totally honest. That's actually why I used it really extensively for like 6 months, and then I started paying it. Then like and was paying attention to my trends and stuff. And this is the worst. This was my habits have changed because this was like 2 or 3 years ago. But it was all the graphs telling me where I was spending my money. That was like, oh, I hate this.
See, that's the wrong response.
I know. It is, isn't it? It's really bad. I was like, this is stupid.
It's like you're taking a class and you're failing it, and you don't like the grades, so you just stop showing up. That'll solve my problem. Brilliant. <That's it.
laughs> good times.
So you should get back to using it.
I actually want to get back to using it because I think it's a lot better now, and I think I would be more pleased with the results.
I literally I have a reminder in my to-do list. Remember the milk, another non-sponsored recommendation. and it repeats it. I get paid twice a month, so I have it go on the 1st and 15th of each month. And the 15th is literally just a check in, make all the tags are right. On the 1st, it's make sure all the tags are right, and then I have a bigger summary reporting thing that I do because I'm a total geek. And so like I was saying, they made their trends feature better, which is to say they made it work, because they've always had a trends feature, and it was okay. And then I always wanted to see, because I like to see trends over time, because like I said, I'm a geek and I understand math, and I don't want to see just pie charts because that doesn't really help you. But line charts over time, or in their case, bar charts, because they feel the need to fill up space over time. It used to work really well on the high level, and then when you tried to like drill down to a certain category, it wouldn't work anymore for some weird reason. They just throw you back to the top level. But anyways, now it works, and it's awesome.
Nice.
You should make sure all your tags are correct, and then check it out, because it's cool. One of the other features, and they've always had it, is you can compare yourself against other people. Not to say you should be comparing yourself to other people in life, but it at least gives you a sanity check. Am I driving more than normal? Is my eating or food habits more than normal? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if you could input, like, here's how many family members I have, so that you could, filter it that way. Because I'm pretty sure we tend to eat less than most people. And I'm sure there's privacy concerns, though, with how much detail you share about yourself on there to get really good splits. But I wonder if they can tell that kind of stuff, Like, that would be fascinating, actually. So we should get the Mint guys on. I don't know if they'd ever talk to us because they're not small anymore. Not to say we only attract small, but, because they can be able to say, hey, you're a single person, or, you're at least sharing the finance with someone. They ought to be able to tell if, like, you have a kid, because all of a sudden you'll be making diaper expenses, and they know if you have an animal, because, that goes in the pet category.
Yeah.
It'd be fascinating to know how much they know about you just based off of trends and using some logic.
Well, not to mention you give them access to your, like, security, social security and bank accounts and credit score. And I mean, there's probably not a lot of information that either they can't deduce or B, just straight up look up.
Yeah, and they probably have to hold themselves back and say, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to keep it all anonymous and aggregated up high so that we can't, so you're not whatever. But
right.
Anyways, I thought that was cool. Check it out. There we go. That's the end of that non-sponsored news update. Another one, I don't know, you don't actually travel much or book travel, huh?
No, but I plan on it.
So if you did, you should check out Hipmunk. Hipmunk?
It's like chipmunk, but for hip people.
Yeah, exactly, without the C. That's actually what I will use to at least look at travel. And I'm a daydreamer by nature, and I will literally go, I wonder how much it costs to fly to Italy today. Let me see. Or like, oh, I want to fly to Italy over Thanksgiving break. What would that look like? And I could just, it's fun just to look it up because they have a cool interface. So those guys are launching a new premium service.
Nice.
And I don't know if it actually says how much it is in this article. I don't see any dollar signs, but that's okay. Basically, what they're doing is they're putting something together for small businesses where you can have like a it's like a business account basically, and it allows you to integrate it with other calendars to see when people's events are, so you can try to line up flight times correctly and get hotel search results near wherever that meeting's taken place. And the other cool thing is that they will allow administrators to book travel for you.
Nice.
So you don't have to do it yourself. And it costs something. I honestly don't know how much. Don't care because I'm not going to use it.
Right.
But pretty cool. And then one of the interesting things too is they just took on or got a $15 million in funding.
Woo.
Woohoo! Good for them. And I thought it was funny. They oh, $10 a month for the first year.
All right. Does it
That's
go
it.
up or down after that?
They said the second
Or
what the second year will bring. He doesn't yet know. He's testing a product out on these first customers who will likely get to keep their low $15 rate as a thanks for being early adopters. So
all right, fair enough.
probably it sounds like this is kind of beta-ish, and then it will go up. But I thought one of the cool things that he said was, he says, I think, it was talking about they're like, oh cool, they're finally getting into revenue, and they're figuring that out, and this is one of their ways of making revenue. And the CEO was like, I think a lot of people's criticisms have been displaced. They see no ads and they think we're making no money. In fact, we're making lots of money. It's not like we're hurting for cash. I know one of the ways they make it is when you actually click on a flight thing and say, yeah, let's do this, they send you over to what is it, Orbitz. And I've got to imagine Orbitz pays them at least like $5.
Yeah, that's definitely that's the I mean that's the classic. If you recommend a book through Amazon, you get it, and enough people buy that book on Amazon.com from your website, you get a cut of the action.
Yeah, so
That's
that's an affiliate program. That's how they're making money.
right.
And they figured out how to make a very pretty search tool. And it looks like they're being successful. So awesome them.
Cool. Definitely. That's awesome. Cool. So I don't want to over exaggerate this story.
Yeah, you
I
do.
you know yeah I okay I do.
Oh, no, you don't want to because you're slowly converting. All right, we're good.
Ouch. That's rough. Well, basically, so this is what it comes down to. This is interesting, but there's a lot more that goes into it. ITV this last quarter outsold Xbox by a fair margin. They sold like 1.7 million ITVs. Microsoft sold like 1.1 Xboxes.
Oh.
Now, everybody's going to jump in at first and say, okay, this is totally unfair. The Xbox is coming nearing the end of its product life cycle. People are starting to expect a new Xbox coming out sometime next year. There's already market saturation, so the total number of Xboxes out there
Yeah.
is enormous, whereas the number of ITVs is still slowly inching up there. Okay. All that compelling argument aside, this is a big deal.
Wow,
And
okay.
the
Then
reason why, and the re and the
give
reason
what
why
you
I want
just said, there's better live up to that.
to say, and the reason why I want to say it's a big deal is because we have been talking, all these, you've got all these different competing presence in the living room devices going on, right? And it's become obvious that the difference between Google TV and ITV, at least on the for the co-hosts of this TV or this podcast, is that they don't have video games. They're missing one feature that your Wii U or your
Oh,
PlayStation
that's not
3 or
totally
Xbox
fair. I mean,
has.
the Xbox has a ton of stuff, and so does the PlayStation doesn't as many, but well,
Well, yeah,
maybe.
but what do they have that the that ITV doesn't, other than video games?
It's got like ESPN.
Okay.
other stuff.
But you understand what it's a competing service.
Okay. Yeah.
It's
I'm
a competing service. So they're different services, but the idea is that when you're trying to become the dominant thing in the living room, you want to become pluggy number one on the TV is what everybody talks about. We usually talk about it in two different spheres of influence, right? You've got Google TV versus ITV, and you're like, well, who's winning there? And then who's pushing what? Who's trying to be dominant? And then you've got the Wii, PlayStation, Xbox 360, and we've often talked about in the past this idea that, you might be wondering who's winning with Google TV versus ITV, but clearly the real winner so far has been the Xbox 360. Microsoft is making the most movement, and I think from a total user base that's true, but I think what's really compelling about this and interesting is that, at least one quarter, pre-Christmas quarter, the ITV doing absolutely no advertising, just sitting on the shelf. People are buying more of them than they are Xboxes. The question that I got tons of questions now. I want to know who's buying which. What's your demographic? What are your which? Of course nobody offers up this information, so you're just guessing if you come up with it. But legitimately, what kind of people are going out and buying ITVs? What kind of people are going and buying Xboxes? What are they buying them for? What's the intention behind them? There's because I think for,
well,
for
I
me,
literally th- I honestly for me I honestly think that the Apple TV is an accessory to the iPad, and there's literally millions of people buying iPads, and
yeah,
it's
true.
Such an easy sell where you go,
it's like $99.
Yeah, and they're already paying an extra $30 to $80 for a smart cover. It's so easy to be like, hey, you don't have to get it today, but what would make a pretty cool present or something to get later would be to get this Apple TV, because check out what you can do. And you show a couple. I look at that and go, dude, that's pretty awesome. If I had a big screen television and an iPad, I would totally get one. It would be a no-brainer.
I love this hypothetical world where you have to, build out a living. I have to basically, if I were to invest $4,000 in electronics, I'd throw in another $100. Why not?
Well, okay, but now let's throw it at the, you get the Xbox 360, and let's pretend that I'm an adult who works and for whatever reason, didn't grow up with Mario. And I don't know. You're not as much going to go, oh yeah, let's get an Xbox instead. That's what makes sense.
Right.
And I think that, especially if you're not a gamer, and there's a lot more non-gamers out there than gamers, and I know that Microsoft is making it very hard not to say we're a gaming system, but that's what they are. They're a gaming system.
Yeah.
Just like, you look at a PC today, and you're like, well, people think productivity. Instantly,
right.
I need to do Word documents. I need to do Excel. I need to make things on it. And it's like, honestly, it's a consumer device. You
right.
watch videos. You read. That's what you do on this PC.
Most people surf the internet most of the day.
Yeah, and the iPad has come out the gate and said we are a consumer device, and now it's fighting for the productivity piece of it, and it just tends to make a more natural fit with the television because they go, oh, cool, consumer. And so, and I think the Xbox is. Is gaming, and even though it's fighting to be more, the sit back and watch type of stuff. That's why I see it is you're just selling. They're selling a boatload of iPads, and the sales guys are doing a good job of going, hey, you know what? It's $100. Throw it in. You'll thank me later. Trust me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Point. PS is going to work with your iMac now. And
right.
And so they're doing it. And I think that there are people out there making purchases going, yeah, and someday it'll get apps and it'll be amazing.
Right, man.
And that's how I see it. I'm sure the end of life is also maybe playing a role. Like you were talking about, it's people who are going to buy Xboxes have already bought them. The majority of people, now they're hitting those tail end of people.
Yeah. I think the first year or two when the 780 or whatever they're going to call it comes out, I think that the first couple of years, you know, the ITV won't even, you know, be a blip on the screen.
It'll for how probably many be what it'll be. But it'll be the Windows Xbox 3 Metro style, I think.
Metro style. Yeah, we'll see if that holds on. No, the Xbox is a different enough department. I'll bet Ballmer will let them keep their own stylings if they so elect.
Yeah, maybe
making enough money. But yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. So that is interesting. It's kind of funny when you think about it, the fact that it is a hobby, but when you talk about like just mere sheer magnitudes, like actually it's really big. Everything else is just that big. Like they talk about like the iPhone division is bigger than Microsoft.
Right. Yeah.
there's you know, just different sizes.
Yeah, that's how big the company is. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point.
Which I mean, if I'm Nintendo or Sony, you got to see this and be like, oh man.
Yeah, these are terrible numbers. These are horrifying numbers. These are pre-Christmas numbers. Ugh. I know. Yeah.
Especially, I'm concerned for Nintendo on that kind of stuff. But
me too.
They cannot release their new system fast enough, and I still think they're gonna have trouble.
Yeah. I'm not.
So have you used YouTube recently?
Yes.
Have you noticed a mini change that they made recently?
I have not actually. But I wasn't paying attention.
One should have been pretty darn obvious. If you go to YouTube.com, maybe they're rolling it out slowly, and you're just, you know, they hate you, and so they give you everything last. I have noticed that.
They. You know what? Google does actually hate me, and they actually give me everything last. So it's entirely possible that is exactly what's going on.
When you go to YouTube.com and you sign in, I guess that's important. Do you sign in when you go to YouTube, or are you just one of those anonymous trolls?
No, man, I am perpetually signed into everything.
All right, Google. Cool.
I want them to keep track of everything because they give me better results and know more about me, eventually they can, you know.
So then, and maybe you can go to YouTube after we're done here. But you should get it's not a pop-up. Websites have gotten smart enough now. They know people block pop-ups, so they do the whole, you know, layover div thing to make it look like a pop-up, but it's not actually one. And are you doing it now? You should get one of those pop-up windows that says, hey, we're now integrating with Google+. And make comments with your real name, and it'll be awesome. And I think they say a couple other things. And then they make it clear that everything that had, like, your original username will still work and still be good. And if you look at our comment section, you will notice that it is now real names, not usernames.
Oh, you know what? I did notice that. Yeah, I did.
There you go.
I didn't even notice that, but...
I didn't even notice that I noticed that. And it sounds like they're doing it, you know, first and foremost, get everyone on Google+ and get it linked into everything, which we knew was coming. But then the other reason they're giving is, oh, it'll cut down on spam and hate comments because people have to use their real names, which I think is just a fun side benefit and one of the things they're using to pitch it. When in reality,
it means is that people will be more attracted to other websites for the social aspect of it. So all that movement that they had, where people would go to YouTube and comment, they're going to drive it away to websites like Reddit and Dig.
To make the comment about the video.
Yeah, where the actual engagement occurs will no longer be on YouTube because it's anonymous.
Yeah, I think they're taking a bet that it's so big that.
What'll happen is people will host on YouTube and then will engage in a community somewhere else. You know, they'll embed
it
in the website.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, me too. Maybe Google's attitude is, that's good for us. Not only do we not mind that, but yeah, if we can get rid of. Yeah, maybe that's exactly what it is. They're saying we don't want that attention.
You know,
we changed our mind.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. So I write a blog, as you know, and I post it to various places. And it's funny, I put it on Twitter and I get like zero response from it, which is fine. It's just there to make me feel good. Mm-hmm. But then it also posts onto Facebook, and I will get comments on Facebook about something I write. Typically not the ones I expect to get comments on. I'll write some and go, man, this one's totally comment worthy, like nothing, crickets. And then another one where you're just like, hey, wow, I got a lot. And it actually took me a while to be okay with the fact that the comments were on Facebook instead of on my blog.
Right.
It actually kind of annoyed me, and I was like, man, I wish I could figure out a way to import these into my blog so that it, you know, stood with the content. But eventually you just kind of get over it and go, eh, this is where people are, and deal with it.
And no wonder at Facebook stocks plummeted and can't find a bottom, because people aren't engaging on Facebook anymore.
Wait, what?
That was sarcasm.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Good, I missed it. It's like I feel like I just argued the opposite.
I was gonna say, no, it's so frustrating. We're talking about all these stupid stocks, and Facebook can't find a bottom, yet people engage on it like crazy, and, you know, anyways, it's, I don't even want to get into that.
Yeah, I've already done the stock rant. Just ditto.
Yeah, exactly. Everything we said applied to Facebook as well. I'm annoyed with the stock market right now. So that's cool. I didn't notice that, but I wonder. But it's probably because I was already tied into Google Plus and everything, and I
yeah. If you were in it, it was just like you hit the OK button, and it's like, all right, done.
Yeah, I probably. Well, I never got a pop up, so I might have done that a long time ago.
No, they rolled it out this week.
Oh.
Maybe you were one of the lucky beta testers.
Yeah, a while ago. Yeah, it's possible.
Maybe you were in it early and you didn't even know it. That was your opportunity. And you didn't even know it.
Yeah, this is why Google is a jerk to me most of the time, because when they are nice to me, I don't even notice.
Yeah, they're like, well, why are we giving him special attention? Mm-hmm. And just ignore it.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So I got a story.
That's good.
I like this story. You want to know why I like this story, James? Because it's the sort of thing that stops me from being able to sleep restfully at night.
Great.
I don't know why I get so much joy out of reading this.
Do you like horror movies? I don't even know.
I don't like horror movies. That's the thing. Like, I never watch horror. This
like
is,
scary
I
movies.
Actually,
do you like scary movies?
No, I don't. I wouldn't say I don't like them. I just never. I'm agnostic to scary movies. I don't watch them, not
agnostic?
Because I'm scared of them.
I think indifference is the word you want.
Well, agnostic.
Agnostic is like a belief thing, right? I'm pretty sure it exists or it doesn't.
Agnostic is
scary,
I don't
it's
really.
Not scary.
Yeah, it's just it doesn't. I mean, like, I literally don't go to scary movies. I don't want scary movies. If a scary movie is on, though, I'll watch it. But I'm never in that situation. Like, I keep thinking to myself, man, you know, I should watch Saw 1 and 2 because they're like these, you know, they're classic pop culture things.
Yeah.
I just have no desire. I'm not as scared of it. I don't. It's not that I don't
sure.
want to watch it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Anyways. Anyways, this sort of stuff, for whatever reason, does keep me up at night. I do worry about it, and yet, like, I love
Can't
reading
get
about
of
it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyways, big Black Hat conference. Black Hats are hackers, bad guys. Basically, they call it the Black Hat conference, which is basically where people come with their exploits for digital technologies and say, hey, this is what is out. This is what I figured out how to do. It's really nasty. So you big corporations that are selling this to people, you might want to figure out how to protect against this. And this dude showed off one that kind of took the cake for me this year.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what happens is it uses an exploit with the near-field communication.
Awesome.
Where all he has to do is set his phone next to a NFC-powered phone, an Android NFC-powered phone, and he can take control of it. He can get all of your personal information. He can download apps. He can use it as part of a bot. Yeah,
wow.
He can. Yeah, that's a new. Did you get that too? Oh, sorry. Never mind. Whoa, I got this like crazy sound in my ear, and I thought you were hearing the same thing.
Like this?
Never mind. No. It was a ding, 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 ding. It was basically the Hangout alerting me that I had been on too long, and wanted me to. So it was nice. Google made an update to the Hangout, and I think it's awesome. They actually made a couple updates that I've noticed, and they're all been pretty cool. See,
I mute
Google,
my computer, so
you
I can't hear it.
You No wonder. Google, you guys can trust me. I do notice when you do cool stuff. So anyways, basically what happens is because of whatever exploit, if your his phone is running something and it pushes a website to the phone, the phone automatically goes to the website. The website is a known exploit that most recent versions of Android protect against, but older versions don't, which since 98% of Android-based phones don't have the newest version, it's still a huge problem. But when it goes to the website, that it's a known exploit to give you all sorts of access. For 2.0 version phones with NFC, which are kind of rare, all you have to do is get close. For 3.0 version phones, which are the most common ones, the screen actually has to be activated. So basically what he said is all he has to do is get his phone close to yours when you're using it for NFC. So like if you're doing a transaction, all he has to do is have his phone close to yours and boom, you can take control of your phone. Which is like horrifying. It's
wow.
Like, are you kidding me? Yeah, it doesn't require any active use on the part of the user. It's just that the NFC is based on the principle of it has to be near, so you're not going to let your phone get near somebody who is, it requires you to be vigilant, but it gives complete access to your phone for certain tasks without, or gives certain tasks, it gets access without having it to ask, hey, you want me to let this other person do this? Like evidently going to websites. I don't even know how he does it, but he was like, yeah, so Google might want to figure that one out. And Google kind of freaked out. And so this is a big move. People are trying to, it's just that, anytime you have a new technology, a new way of communicating, a new part of the system, there's going to be all sorts of exploits that you never even thought about. And this is one of the early ones for NFC, and I imagine that there's going to be a real temptation and a real desire to find exploits like that for your phones. And, especially as it becomes more prevalent, the ability to just be close and trade data between phones. Which just, really, really should hit home the idea of keep your system updated. Every time Java says, hey, we want to update Java on your computer, which I know it happens like 17 times a day, and same with Adobe and PDFs, do it. Just do it. Just update your computer. Keep it up to date. Those are all security things that they've realized somebody has found an exploit and they close the exploit. This is how you ruin the internet by not updating your system. So please, for the sake of my sleep, keep your systems updated.
Wow, that's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
So Matthew, you moving to Kansas anytime soon?
Yes, I am. I am so moving to Camden, Kansas. This is super cool. Number one, I want to point out the fact that Google and Apple have clearly switched roles in awesome advertising. This story is multifaceted. So Apple released a new marketing campaign for anybody who is paying attention to the opening ceremonies of the Olympics.
Not me. I was on vacation.
Yeah, they're dumb. They're actually kind of dumb commercials. They seem very Best Buy-esque. There's nothing. They don't give you that like cool feeling that you got like by I'm a Mac, I'm a PC, or they don't make you feel awesome for being a Mac user. They actually like focus on the idea of Mac users being inept computer users, which I don't know why they've changed that strategy, but that one definitely feels like a Steve Jobs touch was not there. But On the flip side, Google made this promo for what they're calling Google Fiber, and it's amazing. It's like cars going around. It's like the transition of the internet. It's really cool. The music's great. Like it's really awesome. And basically, what Google and got me really jazzed. So that's my first comment. But now talking about what Google Fiber is, it's how it's gonna go. Basically, Google wants to do internet and TV. They want to be a direct competitor to people like Comcast and WB. Pricing for their for internet and TV is going to be $120 a month, and with no installation fee. The just internet is going to be $7 a month, with no installation free. But they're also going to offer free internet, no money. And it's just a $300 construction fee. So now the question, you go, oh, okay, those are reasonable prices. I mean, that's in the ballpark. So the question is, what kind of speeds am I, well, you know, for decent speed. So the question is, what kind of speeds can I expect from this? Let me put it to you this way. James, what's your internet speed right now? About?
Oh, I remember we did this the other day. Was it like 5 or 6?
Yeah, so definitely Google internet that you're going to be getting from them would be somewhere in the ballpark of 200 times faster.
Yes, that'd be awesome. So you said that I will be getting? What does that mean?
Oh, that you could be getting if you lived in an area that was getting Google Fiber. So they're talking about gigabit speed or 1,000 megabytes or megabits per second downtime, which is unbelievably fast for $70 a month. I mean, I was thinking, like, I was trying to figure out, okay, I want to get cool internet one day, and I was looking at Comcast prices, and I was trying to figure out how to justify $200 a month for 100 megabytes per second, and Google suddenly comes out and is like, hey, just so you know, we're doing this. And basically how they're going to determine where to install internet, it's all based on interest. So they're going to pick communities, high-density communities. They're starting in Kansas City, and they're going to have people basically vote, like, or pre-register. Hmm. And by pre-registering for it, if they get enough pre-registrations, they're going to lay down fiber optics, and they're going to bring you super crazy fast internet for affordable prices. And
so why would you need something that fast? I have an idea, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Their argument is, and the little trailer that they did a pretty good job of portraying it, but it's like they show, like, basically they say the internet's really cool. It's got all sorts of cool stuff. It's got video TV. It's got video games. It's got cloud-based stuff, you know, pushing things to the cloud, taking stuff down. All of their services are based around the cloud. And basically what their argument is all of these services are fantastic, and they can all work in concert as long as you have fast enough internet. The reason why people don't use Google for everything, they believe, is because your internet's not fast enough. So their argument is, let's get internet fast enough. And, you know, I think the long-term goal on this is to add some real hardcore competition into the marketplace and really force the hand of companies like Comcast and WB that are actually into, you know, the fiber optic markets to go and do this. The thing is that Google, a long time ago, they bought some of the biggest fiber optic manufacturers in the world. And so they actually control a lot of the fiber optic capacity, manufacturing capacity. So if people are installing fiber optics, it's really good news for Google. And I think it's part of their long-term strategy to, you know, kind of turn that into part of their business model. And you know, I don't think they necessarily want to become a major provider. I think that they just really want to push the envelope and do what they do by enter this. Either you become hugely popular and everybody gets on board and uses your product and like Android, or you know, you just kind of push it forward and even though it never really takes off, it moves people in a compelling direction, you know, and competition is good kind of a perspective. So that's what I think they're doing. What do you think?
Well, I think about web trends, and I really feel like you know, when AOL did its thing, dial-up was, you know, kind of where speeds were at.
Yeah.
You know, this idea of a megabyte was mythical, right. You know, huge, and that resulted in certain types of websites. And then I felt like, you know, this whole idea of DSL and cable really took off, and you got other websites, you know, Dig really being one of those first ones where you looked at it and went, whoa, this is, you know, in some ways, you know, social enabled it, but what really enabled it was you could have a fancy website because it would load at a reasonable amount of time.
Right.
And I feel like they've got to be thinking that in the back of their minds, you know, if we give people this much speed, you're going to come up with crazy stuff.
I think that's
not necessarily lazy programming because you're like, oh, dude, who cares? It could be whatever it is, because you're gonna have people who are like, no, let's make something legitimately awesome. I could see where all of a sudden you got, you know, here's an example, you know, on smartphones, you download apps, and then all it is the data transfer because you want to go as fast as possible. Right. You know, now, dude, you don't care. Make the whole thing a mobile app because it's going to download the pictures and everything just as fast as right. far as the user is concerned. And now you can have, you know, instant updates, you know, just every time you refresh the browser, and it looks like an app, feels like an app, runs like an app, and it's all over the browser. And
right.
And it's the same speed as if you had a mobile, you know, a native device. And you're just going to create awesome, you know, things that we can't even imagine today. You know, Facebook was not possible back when AOL was doing its deal.
Oh yeah, definitely. That wasn't a cultural thing. That was just a speed of the internet had as much to do with that limitation as anything.
Yeah, people wouldn't have put up with it, and I even think, you know, the first version of Facebook, or I should say the current one, is now even bigger than the first version, you know, the Facebook, because now speeds can put up with it. And
oh yeah, definitely. I mean, that's undeniable. I mean, they push web technology all the time, and they can because they get user speed can support it. And the other thing, you know, and I want to echo what you're saying, because yeah, I'm a big believer in the idea that creativity, one of the big governing factors in creativity is the venue. You know, I think I've talked about this on the show before, but it's like music fills the hall that it's in. If it's a big, big hall with terrible acoustics, you're going to it's going to inspire music that is slower paced and louder. Whereas if it's a radio, it's going to inspire a different type of music. You know, we fill the environments that we're given, and I think Google, their imagination, you know, Google gets like 5 gigabytes per second on their campus, so they can imagine, not just really strain themselves, but they know what it can be like. When you can talk to your own servers that fast, and I think for them, they're like, you know, yeah, there are apps that I want to design, or I have designed and I have used, and they're absolutely incredible, but I can't use them at home because I don't have fast enough internet, and people can't use them because they don't have fast enough internet. If only we could have faster internet, we could do this. It would be amazing. And I had another article that kind of was related to it. Basically Tokyo, the article says Tokyo, Seoul and Paris, are getting faster internet for cheaper than anywhere in the United States. Like, this is and there's a big question of why is this? Why can these other cities get really, really fast internet? And usually the telecom companies come back to, well, it's because, you know, those states are, they've got such, you know, higher densities and, you know, smaller areas. And they sit there and go, no, we're not talking about the country on average. We're talking about specific cities. And New York and San Francisco have similar densities and sizes. Why can't they have as fast as? And why are they paying so much more for such slower internet? And, you know, Comcast kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think Google is really, they're gonna ask that question. Why are we paying so much for internet? And I think they're really gonna try to raise consumer expectations. And hopefully, you know, force the hand of the telecoms to really push that forward and get better prices and better internet. You know?
Well, I just pre-registered, so
awesome.
It's coming to Oregon anytime now.
Really? Oh man. Yeah, see, my area, ironically, Silicon Valley.
I was kidding, right? I'm just saying.
Oh.
I registered. It's
Oh, okay.
no,
Yeah.
I know nothing. That was not a.
Okay.
I was just
I
saying, he's
was
coming to Oregon.
like, what? Yeah. Kansas City. Shh, stupid. But pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, yeah. What do I want to talk
So,
about?
I see you got a Mountain Lion article on here.
Yeah, tell me about Mountain Lion.
And you said that it launches without Facebook. I don't think that was ever a big deal. If I remember correctly, they said it was coming in the fall with an update, presumably around iOS 6. So I don't feel like there's any problems there.
Then what was this article? They said that at the launch that it would be coming in
Yeah,
fall
on the, in
with.
the video. Yeah, they said it in this fall,
Oh.
coming to Facebook. So
Oh,
I think
never
that
mind.
got
That's a
blown out of
stupid.
proportion, but
Okay. I missed that one.
yeah. So anyway, so I did get Mountain Lion, which honestly, the thing I like the most, I haven't used it much because I was on vacation. I'm gonna say that as many times as I can,
I know.
no, for what it's worth, has really only been Safari, which didn't actually require Mountain Lion to update,
Yeah.
and I like some of the changes they made on that. But other than that, it's got a notification thing that we've all seen. There's that. That's cool. It looks the same, honestly.
Yeah.
It's one of those, the price point, they made it a no-brainer, and you go, okay, fine. I think if I hadn't upgraded to Lion, this, when you could do both for the price of one, brilliant, do it, make it happen. I got a friend who's like, oh, it'll be better once iOS 6 comes out, because then you'll really see all that integration. Like, eh, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see. But I did read a cool little hack that, it's not really a hack, but a way for me to install it on multiple devices that have different usernames on it,
Yeah.
which is the issue of my household because my wife has her computer and I have mine, and they're two separate Apple accounts. So when I buy something, I have to buy it twice if both of us want it, which is always lame. But thankfully, at least with this one, there's a way to get around it, which is cool.
How do you get around it?
You literally, so I literally, create a new account on her computer where I sign in at, as a separate account, dual login
Oh,
thing.
yeah.
As
Yeah.
myself logged in, sign into the Apple Store, download the software, install it, and then I can delete my account and the new Lion will be on there.
Nice.
Yeah, wish I had known that one last time around when I spent the extra
Yeah.
$30, but now I know. I don't think it'll work with regular software. Otherwise, I think I'd, you just keep the account on the computer and don't worry about it. And every time something new
Right.
comes down, just download it. I don't know. We'll see. I think that's how.
Yeah.
But it's cool, I guess. Whatever. I like I said, I don't.
Great
We'll
review,
see.
James. That's fantastic.
Well, I like OS X. I liked Lion. This has just a couple refinements, and so I like it as well. It's the kind of thing where you're just like, it's not like, oh my gosh, you haven't downloaded it yet. This thing's amazing. It's not like that. It's just, it's good, just like the other ones. Better than Windows for sure. But
Yeah,
this.
that's the basic beating of the drum that I've heard is that Mountain Lion may not be revolutionary, but it's better than Lion, and Windows 8 may not be the worst thing that's ever happened to humanity, but it's close, which is and so that's the right now, at least the media seems to be heading down the direction of you're gonna have a real chasm between the two operating systems, and only time will tell what that what people's opinions will actually be. But everybody seems to like it. They didn't do anything crazy. They didn't do anything wrong. They just added some cool
Played it
new
safe, yeah.
features. Yeah, pretty
So,
much.
have you been watching the Olympics at all?
Yes, I have been.
How have you been doing it? Watching it on
Yeah, I'm
regular
basically watching it
prime
on
time?
TV.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I watched the opening ceremonies. And have you seen the opening ceremonies yet?
No, because I was on vacation.
I
Thanks.
know. I figured. But okay, so I'm going to tell you this, James.
That's fine, I don't care.
No. You and Jesse
Okay.
need to watch The Chariots of Fire part of the opening ceremonies.
Like Hunger Games, Chariots on Fire, or more of...
No, like the Olympic movie about, okay, like 1940s Britain.
All right.
Since it's the British Olympics and it all kind of goes. But yeah. So they play the Chariots of Fire, and you and Jesse should watch it. I think you'll guys enjoy that part.
We will. I think I got to find the best place to watch it. I've got that mobile phone app. It requires me to have a Verizon login, which I don't have. I think to watch the live feed. I might be able to watch replays. And then I think it's available on YouTube and NBC.com, but I've been away, so I haven't actually researched it yet.
Okay. You know what? You can just it looks like you can just YouTube it, actually.
All right. I will make that happen.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, definitely.
Have you seen any amazing feats yet?
Not really. Nothing okay. Crazy. The Michael Phelps, it looks like it will be an amazing feat in and of itself for him to get a gold this year, which is disappointing, I'm sure. Yeah. Because he needed 3 golds in order to set the world record for number of golds.
Yeah.
And one of the clutch events, because I don't think he's going to be able to get many, if any, in his solo event. So basically he's got to get golds in all of his team events. Huh. And one of the real clutch one was the 4x1 freestyle. Everybody was like, America needs to get that one for Mike Phelps. And they came in second.
Oh,
so it's like, it may not happen.
It's That'd a legitimately hard thing to do to, you know, there's a reason why that's an unbelievable record.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a bummer, but, you know, we'll see. His teammate,
is it Loki, right? Is that the guy's
Ryan
name?
Loki, yeah. Everybody's,
perfect name, by the way.
Yeah, everybody's going crazy for him because he's really good and he's kind of a heartthrob, I'm told.
I thought it was just because he was the underdog and he's got the name of a supervillain.
No, it's because he's actually better than Mike Phelps and, like...
Wow.
And,
or at least
and
he is this
looking.
Year, because he wasn't, obviously.
Right, yeah.
4 years
ago. Good point. Yeah, but, so... Pretty fun. Yeah. I'm looking forward to... I've been staying on top of results and stuff, and I've been watching it on TV, but I'm probably... Yeah, this week... Man, I'll probably watch way too much of it this week.
All right. I haven't gotten into it yet. I need to, but like I said, I haven't been back very long. I've been out in the woods camping away from civilization. So,
mm-hmm. Usain Bolt's my man. That's the one I'm waiting for.
Yes, I do want to watch that one.
Oh man, and he came in third in the qualifying, but like that's how he rolls. He's kind of a maniac. He might just be phoning. He might have just phoned it in because he's like, "What if skis? I don't need to do this." Like it's entirely possible that he could set another world record and yet have like not come in first place until the gold medal run, because that's the kind of guy he is. I can't wait. So excited.
That's interesting. Yeah, I read an article about him when they were talking about his attitude and his running style and. Yeah, he's a different beast.
He is a nutcase, and it is so awesome. It's part of what makes him so fun to watch. It's like, not only is he amazingly talented, but he's just kind of crazy. I was listening to the radio, and they were like, and this one of the co-hosts were like, man, I'm not a big fan of Usain Bolt. I just can't be a fan of him. And the other co-host was like, why? And he goes, it's because he has an anti-gay stance. And he was like, what? You're like, what? He's got a political stance, and that's why he goes? And the guy goes, I can't remember his first name, but the American sprinter, his last name is Gay.
Uh-huh.
So I just can't support him. it's pretty awesome.
Man.
Yeah. Pretty funny. Pretty funny. I have been really into it this year.
Cool.
But yeah. So cool. So you went on vacation. Did you do anything else this week?
No, that was the big thing, really. Went backpacking, I got bit by mosquitoes. My wife counted for me. Here, let me look up this number real quick for you. Just to make sure I get the official count here, because it's impressive. Oh yeah, here we go. So my wife had 141 mosquito bites. Our dog, just on his face, had 22 mosquito bites.
Oh my gosh!
I had
248. Holy cow!
The video is not running, but if it were, I have been off and on scratching my legs. It's hard not to when you have just that many bites.
Yeah.
But it was a ton of fun. Very epic adventure. We went to a lake, and we got sunburnt. We got bit by mosquitoes. We also hiked in snow for part of it. We actually melted snow to create water at one point in time because we weren't near any. Yeah. We had the classic, you know, meals that you would expect. We were celebrating our fourth wedding anniversary, hiking, backpacking. So we had we had some raspberry crumble for dessert. We had brought some box wine, which was kind of funny. It was awesome. And then, it was an overall awesome. We hiked, we did the math. It was like 9 miles when it was all said and done.
Nice.
Yeah. And our dog is a total trooper. He loved hiking, hated the tent. So that made sleeping interesting.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me at all.
He literally would do laps in the middle of the night, and just like walking around the edge of the tent. And you could tell that he was so tired he couldn't stand it, but he just wanted to get out. And he, like, because he'd look up at the top and could see the stars and the trees and would just look at it and then just start walking around. And then, like, and poke his – once he learned that we actually had a door and that could get out, he would literally poke and scratch at the door where the zipper was. And like, this is how you get out. I know it. Now, you got to imagine – now, once again, you got to imagine that this is happening at, like, 3 in the morning.
Right.
And he's been doing it for the last couple hours. And I literally would take him at times, and I would grab him and just hold him while I'm laying down until he finally gave up. He'd fall asleep for a little bit. But then, of course, because we're, like, sleeping on hard ground, I would have to move. Because I just, you know, like, your arm falls asleep.
Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah, and you're just like, oh, I can't move. I can't move. But it hurts. It hurts. I have to move. Maybe if I moved very gently. And I'd move. He'd wake up. Boom. Laps. Be like, oh, dog. So I did not sleep well at all. But, hey, but that's okay. He had a ton of fun. He thoroughly enjoyed hiking. There was one time where we finished and we were just taking a break. And he literally, like, crawled in my lap and just passed out. It was pretty cute. It was cute. It was a fun trip. It was fun. But like I said, I got bit crazy. And it was kind of fun to be off the grid for a bit.
Yeah, definitely. Not paying attention. I got it.
Yeah, well, you know.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, awesome, man. Let's do this again next week. What do you think?
I think we should. Same time. Well, how about 10 minutes earlier?
Okay. We'll try for on time this week. Next time.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. All right, man. Everybody else? Thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time.
Hey everybody, check out the Bizzotto interview. We interviewed a pretty cool company. We talked about them a few weeks back, and we got a chance to interview the CEO, and it's really awesome. Check it out. It's on the website, and just download it. It was one of our special episodes. We appreciate it a lot. Thanks, everybody.